There is a science and some secrets to making millions of dollars online through an e-commerce business. Hello, I'm Jared Kraus. I'm the host of the Buying Online Businesses podcast. And today I'm speaking with Alex Fedotoff, who is an entrepreneur running an eight-figure direct-to-consumer portfolio of e-commerce brands in the beauty and education space with his company in e-commerce scaling secrets. He's been in the e-commerce space since 2016 and generated over $100 million in sales. Alex lives in Miami with his wife and his two boys. And in this podcast episode, Alex and I had a beautiful discussion around his experience buying an e-commerce business and what he learned from it, what didn't go so well, and what you can learn from that as well. Then we move into talking about the psychology of marketing and the journey people take when discovering your brand and what goes on for them when, you know, looking to make a decision to purchase your product. And there's so much in this, from how to position your brand using influencers, and if you do use influencers, who you should use, who you shouldn't use, and why. We also talk about email marketing and how to get people on your email list without just asking for a discount code and depreciating the brand of your business by offering discount codes to everybody. We also talk about email marketing tips once people are on your email list for e-commerce brands in a way that's not just shoving your product in front of them aggressively. I share a bunch of things around that as well. We also talk about how to increase your average order value that can help you spend more money on ads. Now, there's so much value in this podcast episode. Also note that if you're thinking about buying a business like we talk about in the start of the episode, make sure you get my due diligence framework. It's what I've used and all of my clients use to buy businesses. It's free, buyingonlinebusinesses.com/free resources. It takes the guesswork out of buying a business. For now, let's dive into the podcast with Alex. Do you have a website you might want to sell either now or in the future? We have a hungry list of cashed up and trained up buyers that want to buy your content website. If you have a site making over $300 per month and want to sell it, head to buyingonlinebusinesses.co/sell-your-business or email us at info@buyingonlinebusinesses.com because we will likely have a buyer. Details are in the description. Alex, thanks for coming to the podcast and welcome.
Thank you, Jared. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Excited for our chat today. There's so many rabbit holes I'm sure we're going to go down. You are the man about scaling e-commerce businesses, and we will talk about this, and I do want to dive into that. Before that, though, I know that you've bought some e-commerce business as well. Is that right?
Yeah.
So what sort of, are you cool with like sort of sharing some of your experiences with buying some of these businesses? Like why?
Yeah, definitely.
Why buy them?
Yeah.
And what size and, you know, what type of businesses?
Yeah. So my experience with buying like e-commerce businesses was relatively limited. Like we only bought like one business. It's the business name is Equal Activewear, so EQYL Activewear, and pretty much that business we acquired. I think was just emotional decision. we just liked the business. My wife ordered some clothes from them, and we decided to buy it. At that point, we already have like portfolio for e-commerce brands, and so we kind of like, you know, decent operators. But we acquired this brand in a totally different category. So it was in a fashion category. And we acquired it. The business had good metrics, like in terms of like 30, 40% repeat purchase rate. So which means 30%, 40% of the customers would come back and buy again. And so we looked at those metrics and numbers looked very solid. But then, you know, the business was kind of like, over time, we just learned, we acquired the business and then we paid all cash. It was all cash transaction. All in was about $300,000. We bought that business and then we starting like kind of like trying to figure out how to run it. So the business was pretty much predicated on owner. And when we bought it, pretty much you removed the most important thing that made the business, you know, successful, which is the owner, right? So the business pretty much like stops functioning. And so our specialty is, paid advertising, usually health and beauty products, gadgets, creams, you know, stuff like that. So that was within our circle of competence, you know, but I don't know. Yeah. So we pretty much like, we tried to run that business for a few months. We tried to kind of like build the team, but also at the same time, we have, you know, our main business that's making sales, making money, making profit every month. And so we just like evaluated and decided to just pause it, put it on pause. And we still have the inventory here that wasn't sold out. So
okay,
that's the whole story.
Good learning experience. What would you say the top two like learning experiences were from that acquisition?
Number one is, first, I mean, just project what would happen if you remove the founder from the business, right? Just project like, okay, so what if founder like tomorrow leaves or the boss hits him or her, and you're taking that business owner, like you're taking that business over. So will you be able to operate it? Will the business still be able to generate sales profit and or not? And if not, it pretty much becomes like almost like a full-time job for you to maintain it. And so it depends what you want to buy. If you want to buy like a full-time passion job for yourself, then that would be a tremendous, you know, decision, right? You buy something that you like and you sell it and you spend a lot of time with it. But if you're looking to buy a business, then it's probably not going to be the great decision. So that's number one. And number two would be, just like circle of competence. I think this is so important, especially if you come in with particular like knowledge on how to operate a specific kind of businesses. This is also exactly the same reason why so many people have burnt with, you know, not burnt, but made poor investment decisions with crypto, you know, with other investment projects where people kind of like investing in something, they get excited, but they don't have specific expertise or knowledge about that industry, that market. And, you know, most of the times it turns out to be a bad decision. So these two things would be probably the biggest learning.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Thanks for just being open and honest to sharing your experience with that and knowing that it wasn't, you know, probably the best financial decision, you know, when you're already making money in your primary business, but you learn a lot from it. And we really appreciate you sharing. I find that when people buy e-commerce businesses, because we teach people to buy media businesses, content websites, e-commerce, SaaS and membership businesses. When we're teaching people to buy e-commerce businesses, the number one question I like to ask people is like, how does the business make money? What's its traffic source? Is it paid ads? Typically an e-commerce business is single source reliant and dependent on paid ads. So if that's the case, how much experience do you have in running paid ads on that platform? And do you believe you can achieve the same result as the previous owner, if not better? Or do you know somebody like Alex that could take over the account and produce the same results, if not better than the previous owner? And if so, how much would that actually cost you? And then factor that into when you're purchasing the business, the actual fee that it may cost you. Because for me, my circle of competence is not in beauty care, e-commerce businesses, and managing ads for beauty care businesses. However, I could buy a business and use you as, you know, that person that has that circle of competence, and you can hire people in to make sure you get those results. You mentioned two big things. Like, there's a big difference between a business owner and a business operator. And some people do go away and buy themselves a job. And typically, most people that I'm teaching, they're happy. They've already got a job, but they want a part-time thing as well on the side so they can, you know, replace their income, have more time spending time with their fans and family. And then I help them move into away from that being a job and create systems and processes and stuff like that, like much like what you would have in your business. So with that said, would you go away and buy another business in the future? Or would you, because it's an interesting one to play. Like, a lot of people here either have a business or are buying a business. They think about building a portfolio of them or just focusing on one. Do you think you would buy more, knowing what you've learned from that experience, knowing that, you know, if you bought something in your circle of competence and it wasn't tied to the owner too much, would you go again?
100%. We would just buy a different we'll just buy a different business. And I mean, at this point, like, we would buy a business that, like, minimum, like, bare minimum would be like $5-10 million in revenue. We would finance it, you know. We would buy a business that has diversified, you know, streams of sales. Ideally, if it's like e-commerce, it would be Shopify and then Amazon. And then if there's some organic, or maybe some organic YouTube, so some source of organic traffic. So then, okay, even if something happens on, you know, the paid advertising side, we still can, you know, generate sales and keep business afloat. So it would be kind of like not super, super like massive business, but at least a business that can, that has some legs already and has some, you know, structure in place that can sustain. And even if the founder moves out, again, coming back to the same kind of thing, even the founder moves out, the business is not so predicated on founder, you know, tweaking the website and, you know, changing some things there. And so that those would be the businesses we definitely would be interested to acquire and grow. And also, I mean, probably the number one thing that that's, you know, both for people that want to start a business or for people that want to acquire a business, I would really look into the like cost structure and unit economics. Like you mentioned, some of those like business models, like content websites. You mentioned membership websites, where it's probably like digital products. So those have very low like overhead compared to the, you know, the price that you sell the product for. So with e-commerce, it's very important factor, because for instance, if your product costs like, I like to use, you know, the rule of three or even four, which means if, let's say, the product costs you, I have product here. Let's say if the product costs you like, let's say $10, right? And you're selling that product for less than like three times or four times, so $30, $40, then it's just like not enough margin for you to go ahead and acquire customers. Like either it's like with Facebook or with TikTok, with any other of these channels on a scale, if you want to grow that business. So margin structure and unit economics would be a very important factor to consider as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what we have, is what's your CLTV, like when we're doing our due diligence on an e-commerce business, understanding your customer lifetime value, and then also what your CPA is for people listening, cost per acquisition, how much it costs you to acquire that customer. And then you've also got your cost of goods, right? Like, which is, you know, your product might cost you $10, but then you need your, you need to have that budget for the marketing. So let's then now move into, like, we've already mentioned, like already using paid ads. This is where we're going to go anyway. What are some of your, before somebody decides to start working with you, what are some of the things they should have in place to know that they can, that you can scale their ads?
That's a good question. So at this point of our business, we prefer to advise people on how to run their ads and how to kind of like optimize their business. We don't have capacity right now to kind of like do all of the like ad management anymore.
So let me rephrase that question then, since your answer would be you'd mostly be advising and consulting. What are some of the most common things that you share with people that help them get the best results with the ads when you start consulting with them? Typically.
For sure. Amazing question. So the way I see it, there's only like, if you're building this kind of like paid acquisition vehicle for your business and your product is something that can be advertised, which means you already have like a, you know, sizable competition. I like niches when there's a lot of competition, which means there is a money to be made and there's a lot of people already advertising. In that case, there's only two things that are important. Three things. So number one is your product, right? So the product itself, does it have any like differentiating points? Does it differentiate anyhow from the competition? It could be branding, it could be perception, it could be some features, some benefits. Maybe it's a bigger product. Maybe it's a smaller product than your competition has. Maybe it's story of the founder, right? So which is one of the easiest things to attach to the product. So there's a different perception why you started this brand and stuff like that, which increases, you know, kind of like make it more relatable for people. So that's number one, the product. Number two is ads, which is, you know, we mostly advertise on Facebook, Instagram. So on that side, it's mostly creative, the visual part of ads, right? How do you communicate the value of your ad? And you can do that within the image, like a banner ad, or you can do that with your, let's say with, right now we're running this format, which is called VSL, Video Sales Letter. And those ads could be like 20, 30 minutes long, which means, you know, 20, 30 minutes, there is like a spokesperson that talks about, you know, particular issue that we're trying to solve. And there is like some videos, you know, edited and dynamically kind of created. So it's like the whole, almost like the whole like documentary about the particular problem that we're trying to solve. And so for anyone who we advising, I would be like, okay, is your competition successful advertising those kind of ads, VSLs, for instance? What kind of ads your competition is running? How they're selling their products successfully? And so kind of like asking and just kind of like seeing what's working right now in the place. Obviously, we can be creative and we can figure out some new solutions, some new ways to advertise. But to get started, it's best to just see what's working already. You know, pioneers, you know, have the arrows in their back. You know, I heard this saying many times. And so so that's the second one. So number one is the product. Number two is ads. And number three is the funnel. And so what I mean by funnel is the website and all of the upsell sequences, you know, post-purchase upsells and stuff like that. What is your average order value and what's your conversion rate? Those two main metrics and how you can increase those. So for instance, can you increase the perceived value of your offer on the website? And the easiest way to do it, for instance, let's say if you are selling a product like this, you can just sell one product, or you can say, hey, if you buy two products, I'll give you two products for free, because your incremental cost for these products will be just like slightly increased if you ship, let's say, four products, but your overall average order value pretty much doubles, because you get people to buy more products. And so, also you increase consumption of your product, which is good, because then people will come back and will buy again. And so those kind of things that, you know, we always kind of advising our clients and taking into consideration. You know, in many cases, I see people taking ads out of context. Okay, you can just adjust some settings on Facebook, or you can just adjust some settings on you know, on Instagram ads and kind of like make some little tweaks. But in most cases, it's kind of like the more holistic view of the business and kind of like all of the moving parts, which is, you know, the product itself, the ads and the funnel. And these three kind of, you know, we mostly advising clients on.
I love it. And I like the way that you, I don't know if people listening actually picked up on this, but I did. I like how you went from the journey in a linear fashion of positioning the product and the brand positioning of the product, and then the ads, then the funnel. What I do like is you talking about in the funnel, upsells, downsells, and what I have seen that can work really well for beauty products and those sorts of brands is an upsell to a membership of like, if you have this, skincare thing, and you know, toothpaste or anything in cosmetics, I guess, toothpaste, toilet paper, like have a membership, monthly or annual membership, where you can say, hey, you can buy this one-time product for $50, but how would you like to get it for $30 every month? You know, you don't have to order it, you don't have to think about it, and it's cheaper. You get a massive discount and you just get it over and over. And I love taking e-commerce businesses and thinking about it in that fashion, from one-time product sales with ups and downs sells to like membership model. And that's a really, really good thing for scalability of ads as well, because you've got so much cash. Well, typically you've got a baseline of cash and you're not always needing to chase the, you know, always like if you stop ads, your revenue doesn't stop. Typically, if you've just got a one-time product sale and you stop ads, typically if you don't have that, like you said before, Shopify storefront with organic traffic, typically your revenue is going to dry up. So really good way to build a bit of a moat and longevity around an e-commerce business. And I want to get back to the brand positioning, because this is really fascinating to me. What are some of the things that people do and share with their brand that helps buy them a lot more trust? Because trust equals sales, right? Basically. What are some of the things that you help people do with positioning their brand and their products branding in a way that allows that trust to sort of either be increased or looked at in a light of like, yeah, this is something that this product resonates with me and it feels like I need it?
100%. I mean, one of the probably easiest things to do would be to incorporate, especially if you're advertising on Facebook, maybe you're already spending some money, to incorporate whitelisted ads. What that means is, let's say you have, there's some influencers and content creators, right? So let's say you work with an influencer and they making like a piece of content for you. Like, let's say they're talking about your product. You know, I like this product. It's an amazing product. And, I highly recommend it. And here's how to use it and stuff like that. So let's say you do that. But then once you have that piece of content, instead of advertising it from your own page on Facebook, you're advertising it from their page on Facebook. And so what happens is, let's say you're browsing Facebook, you're browsing Instagram, and you see the ad popping up from, creator name, for example,
Just say Jenny, for example.
Yeah, Jenny, yeah. Let's say Jenny, right? Jenny Smith, right? So that's her page. You see the product, and it's like, it doesn't seem like someone tries to sell you something. It looks like a genuinely like another person. It talks about something, and then it turns out about product. Okay, you see the product, but then let's say, in another sequence, like retargeting, for example, you retarget people already with your page, and so now it's a second time person sees it. Jenny was saying so many good things about it. Like, now it's another one. Oh, okay. So now the person is more likely to buy. And you can make it as kind of like as sophisticated as you want to be. For example, some of our brands, we have like 10, 15 different pages running in this fashion, where by the time consumer like sees our brand page, like the main page of the brand, they've already seen the ad from like different personalities. Some of them are older, some of them are younger, some are ladies, some are, gentlemen. And so by that time, they're like, "Whoa, wow, it seems like everyone is using this product." And so that's one of the things to kind of like use to your advantage. It's called whitelisted ads, and you can do that on Facebook and I think Instagram as well.
That's awesome. Is that so? Those pages, do you own those pages, and they're people that you use? Are they the pages that you own, and then you use like an influencer's content on those pages, or how does that work? Like,
yeah, you can do it both ways. One way is when influencer already has the page, and they just pretty much giving you the access. Through like official, they're just giving you the access to advertise from their page. So that's number one. Yeah. It could be if you have an agreement with them and they're okay with that, you can create a page for them. You can have that content advertised from that page. Obviously, you fund all of the advertising, and that is another way to facilitate it.
Yeah, I like it. So it's not, just for people listening, it's not like you create a bunch of Facebook pages and Instagram accounts that aren't actually real people, and you're just trying to like fake sell or fake create people. Yeah, you're actually using real influencers, which is awesome. And it's a really good win because you're using their ad account. They can make money from it without having to do any work. And, you sell more products and you help more people. Obviously, they're going to be genuinely using the product. Now, with those, What I see is like, say you've got 10 different influencers and 10 different accounts that you're working with. Do you go away and take their, proof of use, I guess. Social proof is what I'm using for. Do you go away and use their social proof For your ads, your main ads for your main page as well. Like, say you have like a few different influencers saying, I like this product because, and then you have like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different influencers say, looks good, tastes good, smells good, makes me sexy. Like, do you have that in like one ad for your main page? And why does that work? How does that work? Break down the psychology of that for us.
For sure. You just described one of the best performing formats for ads, which is called mashup. So this is exactly what you said. It's where you combine kind of like, you know, the structure of the ad is very like social proof driven, and it shows like, again, like different kind of personalities, you know, some blonde girls, girls with dark hair, some older, some younger, some men, right? So it's kind of like appealing, right? Because as humans, we kind of resonate with people that are like us. And so, the skin color, ethnicity, age, you know, all of those things kind of like can be used to appeal to different like demographics. And usually what you will find with any product is that it's not like your products are being specifically in e-commerce, I guess in other industries as well, is that you usually have not one customer avatar, but most likely you have more like 3-4 customer avatars. So for example, if we're in beauty and we're selling like a skin cream, our skin cream, some ladies in their early 30s, they might have some like early wrinkles. They might be using it to kind of like, you know, stop that process. It also can be used by, maybe some ladies that don't get enough sleep, right? And they want to kind of like hide or like replenish, you know, the, moisturizer skin. Could be some older ladies that already kind of like the skin starts to age. They want to recover that. So there are different kind of like avatars, and there are different uses for each product. Like, there's one very successful company you probably know called Athletic Greens.
Yes.
Athletic Greens from New Zealand, right? And and that company is utilizing, if you'll see how they do it, they sponsor many podcasts. There's a Joe Rogan podcast. I think they're sponsoring many others like Tim Ferriss. So all of these kind of like influencers, they have their own buckets. They have their own kind of like audiences. And what they do is by leveraging, obviously now they have humongous budgets, you know, they can spend to get in front of that audience, but pretty much they're putting the product in front of different audiences. But then, you know, how they speak to those audiences might be slightly different, you know, and, you know, for some people it might be recovery because they didn't sleep much. Okay. This will help you to replenish the vitamins and minerals. For some people, it might be just like, taking care of all of the vitamins for the whole day. So then it saves you time. So the benefits and angles, how they position it for each particular avatar might be different, but at the end of the day, it's just the same product.
Customer avatar, understanding who your demographic is massive, because then that's when you can talk to them and you can resonate with them. Like you said, you know, we resonate with people that are similar to us. How does somebody that's starting to run ads for their e-commerce business work out who that customer, or, you know, there's maybe it's 2 to 3 or 5 different avatars. How do they work that out?
Very good question. One of the easiest ways to do that, if you have no customers, let's say you're starting from scratch, is to go to Amazon and find a product that's similar to yours and just go through the reviews and see what people say and how they say it and who they are. And then look at their on Amazon, like sometimes customers have profiles. I like to click on those and like to see, okay, is this like a man or a woman? Okay. Is this like a older person or is it like younger person? And also by the name, you know, there's the names of people. So are these like mostly men that's buying this product or women that's buying these products? And so by doing that, like it's kind of like gives you that initial kind of like intel. Besides that, I like to go through my competitors, like Facebook ads. Okay, who's my competitor? And if they advertise on Facebook, I go through their ad library I watch their ads. I see what kind of ad copy they have. I clicked on their websites. I go through their whole kind of like flow and see how they're talking to their customers. So this could give you the, I'd say if you have like a relatively like new brand, this can give you like initial foundation, initial at least baseline from which kind of like how to talk to your customers and what language, what words to say. And then once you start advertising, there will be a lot of comments under your ads. And so what you need to do is just kind of like, okay, what do people say? What do people like? What do people don't like? What objections people have? Or people say, oh, this product doesn't work because X, Y, and Z, right? Okay, maybe you should address that concern directly in your ad. Or maybe that should be the whole angle. Like, okay, here's the reason why these products don't work, right? And here's why this product is different. And so, yeah, it's pretty much kind of like initially, it's mostly just competitive intelligence and utilizing what's already in the market. So you don't reinvent the wheel. You don't become a pioneer with arrows in your back. And second, it's utilizing the intelligence that comes in and also using post-purchase surveys. Like we are utilizing those extensively. Once for every customer that buys from us, after they buy, there's a survey. We ask them questions like, what almost stopped you from buying today, right? We're asking them, for instance, what other brands, what other products do you buy and why you like those products? And so we're asking these kind of questions so that we gather intelligence, whether our messaging is on point, maybe we're not mentioning certain things that we should, or maybe we're, you know, on the other hand, maybe we're talking too much about the product where we shouldn't. And so that helps us to adjust and achieve that product market fit.
I love it. I was also going to mention the survey as well after purchasing the product. And you can offer like 15% off your next order, 10, 15, 20% off your next order or whatever it is. And because they already bought from you, they're going to use it anyway. You can just give them a bit of a reward for spending their time on a survey. I wanted to ask about in the funnel process, so before they sort of get to like they're going to go through and see the brand, they're going to see ads, then eventually before they get to the funnel process, how many times do people need to see, hear, or know about your brand before they have enough trust to get to that, start clicking on the website and then go through the funnel? Like, I know that that has changed over the years of me learning about ads and marketing, but is there a, you know, an average metric or is there like some sort of like psychology that happens on people's own, you know, thought process when they're thinking about buying a product? And what are those sort of stages?
Yeah, very good question. So I mean, I think that there is like, the way I try to think about it is like in segments. So for example, there always will be segment of people that are emotional purchasers, that they see the product, they like the product, they buy the product, right? So there will be like segment of those. There also will be segment of people that maybe need to see it like two times. All right. So they see it from another source, maybe another ad. And then they see your retargeting ad with a discount, they come and buy, right? So, but there also will be, you know, kind of like as we go through that cycle, the majority of people, they, if you think about the competitive environment in which you're in for almost like any niche, it's they have seen other products in your niche, most likely. They have considered other products in your niche, most likely. They have purchased other products in your niche, most likely. Right, so now you're in that position where you literally have to kind of like convince that this is something that people need and this is different. And so, in terms of specific numbers, I kind of like have this estimate in my head. It's like between 10 and 20 times and people have to see it. That's why, for instance, these whitelisted ads and running ads from different pages is one of the, you know, one of the hacks to kind of like navigate that, because You can achieve that pretty much with just one advertising channel, which is, let's say, Facebook ads. And so you can just kind of like have this many different impressions from so many different pages, from so many different personalities, that it could be enough for you to, you know, to get those purchases and to scale your ads. And so, but I mean, if thinking even like a bigger picture, then the ideal case scenario and the brands that are growing the fastest, they usually have some kind of like top of the funnel channel. So in many cases right now, TikTok is because of the organic reach that it gives, can serve as that very like good top of the funnel channel, because people see the brand for the first time. And let's say they see the brand from like, you know, dozens of different creators. So now there's like natural, okay, what is this brand? Now people go to Google, right? So now people go to Google. Now people find the brand. Now they land on your website. Now maybe they will not buy. Maybe they will put their email or their phone number, so they get on SMS list. But now they'll be hit with your retargeting ads on Facebook, right? And now they're still receiving your emails, and now they're still receiving your ads. They're still seeing your ads because you're retargeting them. And so, and then let's say one day you have a good offer, 20% off, Christmas sale, Black Friday sale, Mother's Day, Father's Day sale, and they decide to pull the trigger and buy. So I'm thinking about that as more like kind of like as, okay, you need to kind of like dial in one process, but then how do you plant as many seeds as possible with all of these, either with external channels or at least dialing in, you know, one channel, which is, let's say, Facebook, and at least getting that whitelisted strategy dialed in.
I love it. Absolutely love it. You're building a bit like a bit of an ecosystem where people just end up seeing you everywhere. It's like, yeah, being tracked in a way that, you know, like, you know, they come to your website, they, you know, a bit of a pixel, they come back to Facebook, and then you've got a tag for Google, you've got a tag for Facebook, you might have one for LinkedIn and Twitter and all that sort of stuff. And they just feel like, you know, they can't get like the universe is sending them signs that's like, hey, like this product just keeps showing up, which builds so much more trust. At the same time, you know, I like that you've explained that some people might just have it, you know, an impulse or emotional buy. And there's also like those people that like, oh, I follow this influencer and I bought two things that she's recommended, and like this, she's come out with this thing and I need something for my eyes or whatever it is at that time frame. There's so much trust with that influencer. They might just see it one time and just buy it because that influencer has that much trust, which I guess for people listening, if they find the influencers that are the closest, have the audience that are closest to what their avatars are, they're the influencers that are probably going to get the best results for you. And, you know, you're going to be able to pay them big bucks and they'll make you big bucks as well. Now, you mentioned email, you know, people might come to your, you know, website, target them and pixel them and all that sort of stuff. But the email thing is fascinating to me. What are e-commerce brands doing these days that are working quite well to get people onto their email list, other than the get a discount, you know? Is there other cool ways that can be done? Like, let's just give you a 10% discount and get on the email list. You know, what are some of the genius ways that are working quite well now?
For sure. So overall, like, email, I'm thinking about all of this as kind of like the ways to communicate with your customers, not just like, hey, buy this product, but also to communicate and explain the, you know, what your brand is about, right? Like why you're in business. I mean, why the world needs another one of, you know, either it's fashion brand, beauty brand, house brand. And so in email, it's, you know, one of the things that we have on the website is a pop-up. So it's like, hey, you know, get like a 10% off, 20% off, or get some free ebook on a specific topic of the interest, how to improve your skin, how to improve your hair. And so once people request it, we have their email. And so we sell this like educational welcome email series. We tell about the story of the brand. We tell why the brand was started. We talk about our ingredients, our process to make our products. We talk about how our products are different. We plug in some testimonials from customers, like and their experiences. When we have video testimonials, we also plug in those in. And so pretty much it's kind of like, how do we build the trust with a person, right? How do we build the trust? How do we give them information? Because like we're not just, obviously we want to get that transaction, one-time transaction, but also we want to create like a bonding experience with a customer that, all right, I really like this brand and it seems to be trustworthy, so maybe I'll give them a shot, right? But we don't want them just to give us a shot. We want to deliver very well on that first product, on the first transaction, and then continuously sell them other products, you know, if they like the experience. And so for us, the email is kind of like that communication channel. So for example, when we always share like, okay, this customer sent us this testimonial about the product and the results that they have been achieving with our product. And we do like before and after, because they send us before and after images, or we do some kind of like education. Okay, how to improve your skin naturally without doing any kind of like using any of the Botox, any of the chemical, you know, procedures. So we kind of like educating, we're building that trust continuously. And among those cycles, we always have some promotional things as well. Like, you know, Black Friday, it's a whole kind of like build up that going toward that. We have a specific deadline when the sale begins, when it ends, so that people can take advantage of the offer. Christmas we have as well. So some of these big occasions, you definitely want to have something that really pushes the sales and really drives the revenue. But during other times, you want to keep it balanced when you kind of like, you know, telling more about your brand, about the products, you educating them on different things that they may be not aware of. Like for example, we sell gadgets, like beauty gadgets, and one of our technologies that we use is radio frequency technology, and that is something that has been used for a long time in like very expensive clinics, but not something that's like very accessible to normal people. And so we pretty much brought the device to the market. We kind of like, you know, explaining the technology behind it, why it works, why it's being used in those expensive salons, right? And how we can save time, money, effort by using this device at home instead of going to all of those salons and, you know, spending a lot more. So yeah, those kind of elements we integrate into our email, and it's pretty much kind of like back and forward communication with our customers.
Yeah, I like that. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing. I really believe that the best approach to take with an email list, especially for any business, especially for e-commerce, is think of those people on your list as your friends. And would you just every single week or every single month just do a hardcore marketing, like hardcore sell them your product? Like, I don't sell any of my friends any of my products ever. I just, if they ask me about it, then you know, I'll share with them, but just out of association, if they're curious and they can kind of learn more. And the same with the email list is like, you share some things that you've learned about your product and your process and your story. And if they're curious, then they can go away learn more, but you know, you're just building that relationship and trust. And I think that's a really good way to think about it. In terms of getting people on the email list, are there ways that like e-commerce brands are, you know, doing creative things that can get them on the email list as an opt-in? For example, is it like for this brand that's a skincare brand, what complexion skin are you and what oils are best or worst for your skin? Take the quiz sort of thing. Is there other ways that you can use as opt-ins to get people on the list?
Yeah, quizzes are great. You mentioned quizzes are amazing. We currently don't have quizzes. But what we've done is we've done giveaways where, let's say on Instagram, we do giveaway. And if people comment a specific, you know, keyword, then they're pretty much entered in this like sequence where, you know, we're asking them for their email address. And pretty much they, you know, participate in, they get on a special like email list. And one of the participants of that list wins, for example, like an annual supply of our product or any other kind of like related gifts. And so that helps to bring this like quick kind of like burst in email growth, right? So if you want to grow your email list, that can be like very well, that can work very well. that can help you to build that, you know, momentum faster. And another way that we are doing it is sometimes with some products we have compatible like digital products, and so it's kind of like a mix between like information marketing and beauty, kind of like e-commerce, where we're asking them for the opt-in, and pretty much what we are kind of like selling them is like a bundle between digital product and physical product. For example, 35 foods that make 35 foods that make your food make your skin look worse, and then another could be like mini course, 5 routines to take 5 years off your skin in like 35 days, and stuff like that, and then package it with a physical product that will actually help them achieve their goal. So these are the ones that we have used.
I love that. That's a really good way to increase average order value. Like you said in the funnel, like you're going to get people to like the order page, and you can have upsells and downsells, and adding for no profit, for no really cost of goods compared to an e-commerce product, you don't have a cost of goods there. You've just got a one-time product that, is going to get a decent profit margin, which, if you think about it, for people that are running ads starting out, maybe they're not profiting on the product, but they are from that digital product. Like the physical product they may not be profiting on, but the digital product gets them profitable so they can continue scaling ads, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think this is one of the most like underused opportunities, like kind of like taking some of these things from this like information marketing and how digital products are being sold and combining those ideas with e-commerce, because everyone is just like, you come to the website, here's the product, buy the product, and it's like very kind of like standard transaction. Whereas if you start building on value, and you also, okay, you're getting this product, but also you're getting this, and you're also getting this, and you're getting this, and you're getting this, and you're getting this. And it's kind of the whole like system to actually apply that product and get results instead of just like, one little piece. So the perceived value of the system will be greater, and subsequently the conversion rates, the AOV, margin structure, like everything that you mentioned will also be better.
Yeah. So much more valuable. And that's what builds a good business, right? Value. The more value we create and give, the more money we're going to make, and the more people we can help. So Alex, that's been such a good conversation to have you come on. Thank you so much for sharing some of these e-commerce scaling secrets with us. I really appreciate it. Where can people find out more about what you guys are up to?
Thank you, Jared. Thank you so much for inviting me. And yeah, you can connect with me on Instagram. I'm pretty active there. It's Alex Fedotov, 3F at the end. So Alex Fedotov, and 3F at the end. And yeah, I think this will be probably the best place to find me.
Awesome. I'll share that link in the show notes. Everybody that is listening, thank you for listening. If you know somebody with an e-commerce business, please do them a massive favor and share this podcast episode with them. Alex and I went through some insanely valuable things that can help people scale their e-commerce brands with like not even just paid ads, like just adding things on without having to spend more on ads. So give the gift of giving, share this pod, and I'll speak to you guys on the next one.
Hey YouTube watcher, if you thought that video was good, you should check out this video here on the two best types of websites beginners should buy. Or check out my playlist on how I made my first 100K from buying websites and how to do due diligence. Check it out. It's an awesome playlist. You'll enjoy it.